Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. It is truly amazing at this point in time to recognize the widespread chaos that is unfolding in the world around us. There are the things that are very apparent, the things that are right in our face because the news talks about them. Those things are primarily political and related to war, and we're going to talk about the war today. And I say the war, and sad that I have to specify and point out exactly which war it is that I'm referring to now that there are so many occurring simultaneously across the globe. I am referring to the newest, or among the newest, of wars to break out, which is, of course, the U.S. in Iran. But beyond just the obvious, right, those are the things that everyone knows about because they're unavoidable. They're being thrown in our faces by every news channel. They're a part of so many conversations. It's a spectacle, right? The videos that you see of missiles and drones and interceptors and torpedoes, etc., show the breadth and the depth of the devastation that's being caused in Iran and throughout the Middle East currently. But then there's things that aren't so obvious, at least not to the regular person who may not be paying super close attention. As Bo Burnham would say, it's that funny feeling, perhaps, of noticing an abnormally warm winter, of the change in cost at the grocery store, or your utility bill, of hearing of friends or family who lost a job and are struggling to find another, of noticing less insects hitting the windshield on a long drive, or the lack of butterflies or bees in the garden. There's tons of little things signaling much wider, much deeper problems in the background. For those of us who are watching, who are reading the papers and the studies, who are listening to the scientists, reticent or not, are seeing a constant barrage of canaries in the coal mine, of regime changes, stair-step shifts, signifying a more rapidly approaching collapse of ecosystems, of biodiversity, and of climate. Different people notice these changes in different ways. Some don't notice them at all. And the ways that people react are just as varied. Some with their heads in the sand, some panicking, others simply observing and noting. The one thing that strikes me is that we're headed into a world that is different. Every day brings something new, every year a new record, and it feels as though we have entered a time of true acceleration in which the linear changes are no more. Now, all that said, the wheels of collapse still turn slowly, and the way that we are desensitized as those changes come more rapidly, we become more accustomed to changes. We come to expect them. And so from our perspectives, it may feel that things aren't changing all that rapidly. But then I recall just back to, you know, the 6 to 10 years ago when collapse was a theory instead of something that we were watching play out. Now, of course, we were watching it play out. It was happening, but it was talked about much more theoretically because the changes were so slow. They were few and far between. There was much more concern about the signs to watch for as they came in the future. And now we're seeing those signs play out today. All right. Today's episode is specifically on the war that has been waged in Iran by the United States. There's too much to talk about in regards to this, potential threats and consequences of this war. We're not going to be able to touch on them all, and we're not going to into great detail on, you know, what exactly is happening, why it's happening. I'll just do a sort of quick summary of where we're at, what has happened over the course of the last, 10 days or so now since the war began. At this point, thousands, I believe it's 2,000 or more, drones have been fired in response to U.S. attacks by Iran. These drones have struck many locations throughout the Middle East, multiple countries, some of which were not even involved necessarily in the conflict. We're talking places like Kuwait, the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Syria, Iraq, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Cyprus, Oman, Turkey, Azerbaijan. It's been a series of drone attacks as well as missile attacks. This in response to the U.S., which sent hundreds of missiles into Iran, initially targeting leaders, like Khamenei, who they killed, as well as apparently 50 other high-level leaders in the government and military. They targeted missile silos, they targeted military vehicles, ships, even using the first torpedo since World War II to destroy one of Iran's frigates. There have been strikes in more than 30 Iranian cities, and the number of deaths is well over 1,000 at this point, just in Iran itself, probably approaching somewhere near 2,000 when you consider U.S. deaths and deaths in other Middle East countries. Iran themselves say that they, this just came out today, just a couple minutes ago, they said, the latest, Iran's president says nation will not bow to pressure from U.S. and Israel. There have been conflicting statements coming out of Iran, some saying that they're willing to talk, some say that they are not. The president himself issued an apology for striking other places in the Middle East, but then saying that they would do it again, they would continue to do it if strikes came from or were supported in those areas, even if they came from the U.S. or Israel. They, however, are now saying that they can fight an intense war for 6 months, saying they can continue this pace without break for 6 months straight. Now, of course, militaries often bluster, they often lie. It's not known whether or not they could actually continue this for 6 months. But if President Trump was hoping for a quick action like he saw in Venezuela, then that is unlikely to happen if we continue to see Iran respond for 6 months or more. Also, just moments ago, Tehran indicated that Khamenei's son will be named supreme leader. This complicates Trump's strategy a bit, and it's yet to be seen how he will respond to that and if his plans will be to simply continue to hunt down and take out any leaders that Iran puts in place. Donald Trump wants to be in charge. He wants to be the one to choose their new leader. And he says that he will accept nothing but surrender, essentially saying that Iran has to do as the U.S. wishes, and that he would essentially like to install, you know, someone who will obey U.S. commands, etc. All right, so that's kind of where we're at. We're seeing strikes daily, both out of Iran and from the U.S. and Israel into Iran. Let's talk about some of the consequences and some of the areas of concern that I have just watching this war unfold. The first is that a new article came out today saying that the Iran war's targets widen into civilian infrastructure and Saudi Arabia reports first deaths. This is not the greatest of concerns, but it's one that I want to mention. It's that Iran is starting to potentially target civilian infrastructure rather than just military. As they retaliate, they have struck some things, like in Bahrain, they struck a desalination plant, or I guess multiple desalination plants that are crucial for the Gulf nation's drinking water. Projectiles have started to fall into residential areas, whether targeted or not, in places like Saudi Arabia, which has now reported its first deaths. Airports have been targets. So I guess the point is here that as the targets widen from just military assets to civilian assets, not only does it spell trouble, obviously, for the civilians that are being directly impacted and killed, but for the infrastructure and the large amounts of time and resources that it can take to fix that infrastructure and the impacts that it has on local communities and even cascading out into wider communities. Iran, a nation which cannot go toe-to-toe with the U.S. or Israeli military, will seek to lash out and hurt the world where it can. And if that doesn't mean conventional warfare, then it means targeting the economy. It means targeting infrastructure. And so I worry about an escalation in which more and more infrastructure is targeted. I'm worried about sleeper cells, right, of terrorism, the potential for individuals to carry out things in Iran's name throughout different parts of the world, that type of retaliation. And we haven't seen too much of that yet. There have been some. There was a shooting in the U.S. carried out by someone who was pro-Iranian. I don't believe there was ever a specific, you know, motive declared from that attack, but it seemed like it was in retaliation for the war. So it's something to keep an eye on, and we'll have to observe as we get further into this. Now, obviously, some of the biggest concerns about this war come from the impacts it will have economically on the rest of the world. Now, there's a lot going on here and many different things to discuss. You know, one, for example, the U.S. just a couple of days ago, at least at the time of recording this, bombed oil depots throughout Iran. Those are some of the most epic videos that I've seen so far from this conflict. Massive plumes of dark black smoke billowing into the sky, fires raging thousands of feet into the air, and those fires themselves looking to extend miles. Some of that oil made its way into sewer systems and burned, and there are videos of entire streets on fire as the sewers burn off the oil. It wasn't just one oil depot, it was many. Now, of course, this has an immediate and major impact on pollution in the area. It has an impact on carbon dioxide being emitted into the atmosphere and other pollutants from the burning off of all of these oil depots. But from an economic standpoint, this is extremely dangerous when it comes to the volatility of oil prices. Iran is a major oil player, right? They are contributing a massive amount of oil to the global market. By choking off their oil, by not allowing them, ships to come in and out, by destroying these oil depots, disrupting that market stands to disrupt the global economy as a whole. Qatar warns that oil could double to $150 a barrel and bring down the economies of the world. This was an article from a paper called thisismoney.co.uk. Oil was already around $90 a barrel after the start of the war. Previously, it was around average prices, $60, $70, sitting now around $90, and they're saying that it has the potential to hit $150. Mr. Kabi, this is Saad Al-Kabi. He is Qatar's energy minister. I'm sorry, I know I just said Qatar, and before I said Qatar, I'm not sure which way it's actually supposed to be pronounced. I usually just go back and forth. He says, if this war continues for a few weeks, GDP growth around the world will be impacted. Everybody's energy price is going to be higher. There will be shortages of some products, and there will be a chain reaction of factories that cannot supply. He warns Gulf energy exporters could shut down production, and that in turn would drive the price of oil up. He told the FT that even if the war does end soon, it is likely to take weeks or months for production cycles to return to normal. That comes after an Iran drone strike hit its largest liquefied natural gas plant earlier in the week. Oil is on track for its biggest weekly gain since 2022, as conflict in the Middle East disrupts markets and adds to fears of a fresh bout of inflation. I know here locally we've seen gas prices go up by about 50 cents this last week, at least in my locality. I know other parts it's gone up even more. I read somewhere that in Europe, gas prices have increased between 50 and 100%. That's for natural gas. This was one of my long shots from last year, from 2025, that we would see European natural gas prices increase by 50%. And I had to rub it in my family's face that I got it, but I got it late. All right. So oil itself impacted by the war, partially because of what we talked about with different areas being directly bombed, but we're also seeing issues with the Strait of Hormuz being essentially shut down. It's now been closed for 10 days, and this impacts things in many ways. It's not just oil, though oil is a huge part of it, as most of the oil from the Middle East is shipped out through that strait. One popular image I saw going around was saying that while everyone's focused on crude prices, there are other effects in the Strait of Hormuz, such as sulfur, nickel processing, cobalt, batteries, transformers, chips, all of these things that come out of the Strait of Hormuz. This includes TSMC, which is Taiwan's big microchip plant, service most of the world's microchips, and many of the requirements for those chips come out of the Strait of Hormuz. So there's just so much. Shutting that down is going to have a cascading global impact on the economy. Now, this widens the likelihood, or I should say increases the likelihood, that the U.S. will put boots on the ground, which boots on the ground would, of course, extend this war indefinitely. Many people are saying that it's not going to happen, that there's just no way that the U.S. is going to put boots on the ground. That's asinine to believe that. While others are saying that bombing of the oil depots and the Strait of Hormuz being shut down are gravely dangerous to the world economy and to the U.S. economy, and that's something that Donald Trump won't tolerate. Pete Hegseth himself has said that he is not counting out the possibility of boots on the ground. And so for me personally, it seems like something that could very well happen. Is it a given? No. But I could see a limited, well, at least initially limited boots on the ground campaign in an effort to secure and open the Strait of Hormuz, which could then escalate into a longer boots on the ground or a wider campaign in which there's potentially troops inside of Iran in places like Tehran trying to secure government facilities, enforce elections, and all those types of things. So the question becomes, does this become another Afghanistan? Are we going to be putting tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars worth of resources into Iran, into a war that can never truly be won, into a war that creates a power vacuum in the Middle East, collapsing Iran and turning it into another Iraq or Afghanistan? What does it mean in the long term for not just the tens of millions of people? I believe the population of Iran is somewhere around 30 million. Not just for the 100 million people in Iran itself, but the hundreds of millions of people throughout the Middle East affected by that type of internal collapse of power vacuums. And then, of course, the knock-on effects that it could have on billions. There's also, of course, always the risk of escalation. You have in Donald Trump a completely unstable leader who thirsts for violence and control. And if this war does not go the way that he wants, or if it's not fast enough, if it's not entertaining enough for him, what are the chances of an escalation of the use of force, potentially even the use of tactical nuclear weapons? For a while, there was on Poly Market or Kalshi, one of the betting markets, a bet open in which it was asked when the first nuclear bomb would be used. Would it be prior to the end of 2026? Would it be within the next couple of months? And there were millions of dollars of bets being made about when the first nuke would fly. Before it got shut down, I can't remember exactly the percentage, but it was something like a 5 to 10% chance is what people were putting it at of a nuke flying in the coming months. Luckily, that did get shut down, and with good reason. People were freaking out about it. There was backlash, essentially because we've seen so much what you could kind of consider insider trading. Essentially, someone puts in $100,000 on a low probability outcome moments before that outcome actually takes place. Why? Well, because powerful people have influence to make these things happen. And if they or someone they know puts money in and then they make it happen, not only they then get to walk away as millionaires or multimillionaires simply by carrying out the awful act. And so in this case, saying, hey, there's a 5% chance of a nuke flying in the next 3 months. If your odds are 20 to 1, so you put down $100,000, well, congrats. If you have the ability to influence the decision to have a nuke fly, you could make $2 million on your bet. So anyway, that was removed, and hopefully things like that are not allowed in the future. I don't think that the threat of nuclear warfare is great this year, but it can't be discounted. And as Donald Trump becomes more desperate, as he tries harder and harder to distract from the Epstein files, as he prepares for the midterms, who knows what his desperation could turn into? And can we honestly say we'd be surprised by anything at this point? All right, I'm going to end the episode here. We will continue to talk about this as more unfolds in the coming days and weeks. Keep your car full of gas if you drive. Do the best you can to mitigate against price shocks. And that's in everything, right? Food, energy, all your utilities, et cetera, et cetera. I know we just touched on a little bit of this today, but let me know your thoughts. Let me know what I missed. If there's any part of this war that's got you extremely concerned or any interesting articles that you've seen about the potential consequences, and we will touch back on it here. Thanks. Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.